Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
There's a crisis in manhood. On one hand, we have people who think that any type of masculinity is toxic masculinity. But then on the other hand, we have a real problem in society where men are not sticking around with their wives and their families. They're not raising their children. There is this sort of toxic soup of male hormones in a soft and pudgy bag squeezed into skinny jeans with some sort of fake unearned beard and hipster glasses walking around that believes that anything masculine is bad, inherently. I just recently read an article in the Outside magazine, which I get for essentially trail advice and trail information. I'm subscribed to two outdoor magazines, Outside and Backpacker. And what's interesting is over the last 10 years, I have watched those two magazines become nothing more than liberal propaganda. They had this interesting piece about an organization that does sort of this manscape where guys and their young sons can escape together with a group of guys and go out into the desert and essentially do manly things. And in the process of this is supposed to sort of chip away at, you know, the things that make it hard to be a dude or whatever, and kind of reveal the inner man and sort of help men get in touch with who they are, that kind of thing. And the article, the program is actually really innovative. It's this idea that if we get out into the wilderness and connect with wilderness, and if we get out into the wilderness with big machines that make lots of noise, you know, motorcycles and four-wheelers and things like that, that will sort of help us to get in touch with our inner masculinity, doing masculine things, and then we open up more. And it's actually a pretty intriguing idea, and it's this reconnecting mankind with nature, because after all, if you think back into history, men were always exploring. We were always looking for the next mountain to conquest. Well, now we don't have that anymore. We sit in our cubicles. And so it's an interesting concept, but this entire article was this San Francisco guy who you could tell by the way he wrote it that it was the whole thing was just like anything that you do that's masculine is somehow toxic, and he didn't want to raise his kid that way, and he sort of tongue-in-cheek made fun of it. Anyway, it's a crisis because I think both sides aren't recognizing the real problem here. So I want to dive into this in today's podcast with my friend Vadim Dale. We're going to talk about a lot of things. Cars, because he has a YouTube channel that is all about reviewing cars of all types. And when I was recently purchasing a vehicle, I went to him for advice because it was a particular type of vehicle I wanted to know about. We'll talk about that story as well. Vadim Dale, not only a former LMPD police officer, now St. Matthews police officer, but also the former Outback Jack, which is basically Australia's version of... He's also a very famous adventurer, formerly known as Outback Jack, which was on a TV show that was America's version of The Bachelor. He's a super guy. He's a family man. He's got daughters. He's one of the kindest, gentlest men that I've ever met in my life, but he's also one of the most masculine guys you ever want to be around. He is, to me, the epitome of manhood, a family guy who loves his family, who wants to protect people. He's always been a protector, and he's got some interesting insight into all of these things, plus cars. Rawr, rawr. It'll be awesome. Now, real quick, before we get into that, the coronavirus is... Good Lord. Should you worry about it? No, you shouldn't worry about the coronavirus. You should take precautions. Wash your hands. Live your life. Have your grandparents stay away from crowds, right? Like, those are the basic precautions. Same thing you would do if you knew the flu was running around crazy in your neighborhood. But should you worry about the panic? That one, yes. This is crazy. I woke up this morning, saw the markets had crashed 1,900 points before they were triggered into a stop trade. That was all triggered by oil prices. There apparently is some sort of argument between Saudi Arabia and Russia, and they want to cut the production of oil because we're not buying oil because nobody's traveling now because of the coronavirus, which makes sense. You know, and they want to keep the prices up where it's profitable, so they want to kind of pull back so they don't have a glut of supply, which would cause prices to drop precipitously. So they were arguing, and apparently talks broke down. So Saudi Arabia took their ball and went home and said, well, okay, we'll just keep producing it. That's caused the oil to tank by 30%, which looks great at the gas pump because you're going to be paying like less than $2 a gallon pretty soon. But at the end of the day, it's a big signal that the panic from this virus economically is going to continue. That has me a little bit worried in the short term, not the long term. If I had a bunch of money right now to invest, right now I'd be scooping up cheap stocks. But in the short term, yeah, this is going to be an economic snafu. And you're going to have to watch because the left-wing media is going to eat this up. They were part of the reason this panic happened, and they did it because they can't wait to bring this on Trump. I don't think it's going to work because the fundamentals of the economy are still strong, but it's just something to think about. Go ahead, in case you have crazy local officials who decide they want to quarantine everybody, and get yourself some toilet paper and some supplies. I went to my local grocery store. There was no toilet paper. Fortunately, my wife and I have always kept a big supply of toilet paper, not because we're worried about some kind of pandemic, but because we always buy it when it's cheap, and we end up with a big supply of it. So we got plenty if you want to buy some for three easy payments of $200. You know, keep a little bit of supply in case you feel like you want to stick around the house and you want to go outside where people are sick. But largely, we shouldn't worry about this. It's really the flu. It's elderly people that should be more concerned. They do have a higher death rate. So keep your grandparents away from crowds. Sanitize your hands. I bought a little hand sanitizer, put it in both cars, and I just wash my hands more. But you know what? We should have a conversation about our immune system and the crap that we eat and processed food that compromises that immune system. In fact, I have a recommendation for you. If you go back in the podcast archives of this very podcast, find the Mark Sisson podcast. Mark Sisson of Mark's Daily Apple. He's the author of The Primal Blueprint, a best-selling book, New York Times bestseller. I have it. It changed my life. And read about how you could literally change your diet and completely boost your immune system. It's pretty amazing stuff. All right, without further ado, our next guest on the podcast once faced down a crocodile in the bush of Australia. How about that? Let's bring in my good friend, the Outback Jack Vadum Dale. Vadum Dale, sir, it is good to talk to you on the Disruption Zone. How are things?
Bloody great, man. Always good to talk to you. What's news?
Oh, you know, actually right now I'm talking to you via the phone because I'm hanging out in the mountains. Just wanted to get away from things for a while and kind of recalibrate and set things up. And wilderness does that to me, dude. And I know you're a big fan of the wilderness because you're an outdoor adventurer, and I just like getting outside. And I know you do too. You do as well.
I pray that one day that's where I'll end up, mate. Back in the wilderness where at least I belong, and probably most people. But I do miss it.
You let's talk about your background a little bit because people know you as Officer Vadum Dale. St. Matthew's Police Department, but you were Outback Jack. What does that mean to people who don't know what Outback Jack is in Australia, where you come from?
Mate, well, you got to be careful what you wish for. You know, there's always wishing to be surrounded by women, and that wish came true, and it still holds true to this day. But you know, American show filmed in Australia, an outdoor survival guy. And a bunch of beautiful women, and I was left with one, and everyone says, you know, you made a good choice or you picked the right one, but you know, I ultimately think she picked me.
That shows like the American equivalent of The Bachelor, and you met your wife on it, and now you guys are still together with kids and everything and having a happy, awesome life.
Yeah, very, very blessed that she puts up with me. 16 years. I think we've been married 14 years and three daughters. And, you know, it can work. It just depends on, you know, the individual soul and finding the right partner. And there was no pressure to marry or anything like that on the show. We just, after the show, realized, you know, hey, we do have feelings for each other. Let's see where it goes. And here we are today.
I love it. That's awesome. And I want to talk a little bit more about that side of you later on. The outdoor side, though, you've been an adventurer. You've been all over the world. Tell me a little bit about your outside pedigree, so to speak, the things that you've done, the exploring, the wilderness guy. Why do you love wilderness so much?
Man, I don't know the pinpoint answer. I really don't. I mean, obviously, growing up, in Australia. You're always outdoors. We didn't have electronics back then, or at least my family didn't, on a farm. And, you know, my family always pushed me outside because there was really nothing to do inside. And developed a love for all living things, especially animals. And I think just, you know, being by yourself, you know, I had a brother, he passed away. So I learned to enjoy my own company very quickly. And I don't know, I feel sorry for people that don't, they're missing out on such a huge part of the mind, body and soul when they're not in touch with nature, animals, outdoors. You know, we can really easily get trapped in these electronics these days. But I know that's when it started, you know, when I was young in Australia, riding horses and being, and obviously not everyone gets to have that. Right. When they're young, so I was obviously blessed to have that from an early age. But it's not something that's out of reach to anyone. You can walk outside, and, and take it all in, soak it all in. Look up. I always tell my girls, look up. Yeah. Everyone's always looking down, and there's nothing wrong with looking up because it's good for the soul.
Do you guys have an outhouse? Did you have indoor plumbing or an outhouse?
Yeah. Yeah, we did. Now that didn't last too long, but you know, when you're in the middle of nowhere, you go where you got to go, and I mean that with all respect.
It's funny. I wonder if our backgrounds are maybe more similar than we thought. I grew up on an Indian reservation in southern Arizona. You know, we obviously had indoor plumbing in my house, but there when we first moved out there, there were still villages out in the desert that had no electricity. And I had a friend, one of my best friends from high school, his dad was a rancher, and I went out to stay at his ranch, and they had a generator. So we had the generator on to play Sega video games. Yeah. And then in the middle of the night, I was like, man, I got to go to the bathroom. And he's like, oh, he's like, I better go with you. And I'm like, what do you mean? So we had to go outside the house. We had to walk out in the desert in the middle of the night. I mean, it's so beautiful, starry night, you know, in the middle of nothing. And like, he's like, I got to stand guard. I'm like, what do you mean you have to stand guard? So, like, there's coyotes, there's mountain lions, you know, there's all kind of animals and predators around. And they had this stool that was over a hole in a clearing in the desert. And I had to use the bathroom there while my friend stood guard. It was so funny, but it was like, it was wild, you know what I mean? And wild in that great sense. And I don't know about you, Vadim, but, and I know you're a man of faith. But when I'm in the wild, I connect with God more. I think it's when you get stripped of those technological walls that we build between us and God that we actually come face to face with our Creator. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I know. You know, we think we're really making strides as a species, the human species, and we're so intelligent. But actually, it's just AI, you know, artificial right. intelligence that's doing the thinking for us. I remember, mate, I used to remember 100 phone numbers. You know, I could get my way from one end of the Australia to the other without any electronics whatsoever. Hmm. You know, I struggle to get to bloody Lexington these days.
I know.
Have electronics, you know?
It's why I can't even remember my wife's phone number. It's just that it's wife in my phone. I don't know what the number is. That's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, to get back to your point, mate, man, there's just something so spiritual. It's got nothing to do with religions or anything like that. You have your own God, whatever it is.
Right.
But you get outdoors and you're just one with nature. And there's something special to be said about that. I love it. Always will.
What was it? Did you know? I mean, we think of Australia as obviously big wilderness. I mean, it's kind of like a donut, right? I mean, most of the people live around the edges on the outside ring, and never put, you know, in the middle is like this huge, amazing wilderness, but I've only seen it on TV. Tell me what it was like. I mean, what maybe was the scariest moment, the weirdest thing you ever ran into, you know, when you were trekking in and around in the wilderness? What's it like there?
I mean, it's beautiful. It really is beautiful. And a lot of the times when I would disappear, they call it walkabouts, but I'd disappear for days on end, and I'd have a couple of dogs and a horse with me and find a beautiful spot where I could go fishing and just sort of learn to enjoy my own company and time. And it wasn't something that was deliberate. I just was like, I'm going to go on an adventure. I was lucky enough to be able to do that. But it's beautiful. And you know, there's areas of Australia that are on that coastal region. that perimeter that are just as beautiful as the interior of Australia. I know a lot of people think it's arid, flat, desert, but there are like Garden of Edens set up all through Australia where it's considered the outback. And I nearly got taken by a croc once. That was probably the closest I've come to death, at least by an animal. A reptile, whatever you want to call it. A croc almost got me once in Kakadu National Park. It's a huge national park, similar to the Amazon sort of, but Australia's version. And my old man had taught me from a young age about crocs. You learn about them. I'd caught them. I'd had them as pets, babies, like lizards, snakes, you name it. But I'd learned a particular sound that a crocodile makes prior to it coming out of the water. They basically exhale. They get down, they sink their eyes, they're basically locked in on a target, they sink down, they get ready, and then they shoot out of the water, and it was like a bloop, bloop, the sound of the air. And it was probably 11:30 at night, I was drinking some bloody VBs or Fosters on the edge of a water, a mate of mine was checking his nets, his yabby nets, and I heard that sound. And it was a clear sky, and I looked down, and I could see this silhouette of this head under the water. You know, it was probably 2 feet of water, and I immediately moved, and it must have scared the croc, and the croc just splashed and turned around. And
whoa.
Oh man, I tell you what, I still to this day think about that moment, how close that bloody was to me. Because once they get you, mate,
yeah, you're
done. It's almost impossible to survive,
right?
They rip you apart, but they drown you first. That's primarily what they do. But the good Lord was looking over me that day. I'm very thankful for that, because all the boys sort of, we all looked at each other and were like, damn, okay, let's get the beers, let's go back to the campsite, and let's just call it a night.
What's more dangerous, crocodiles or people?
Well, people, of course. crocodiles have survived the test of time, and people, we are our own worst enemy. We seem to ruin everything that we touch.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. And you got to stay positive, of course, but crocodiles, I love them. I love all animals. I'd protect them with my life if I have to.
I love that attitude, because, you know, it to me, like, there's nothing like, I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about, this bow hunting, but they were talking about what it was like on a primal level to be so close to an animal that you can hear it breathe, you know, and there's something, you know, whether you're a hunter or not, there's something primal about that, you know. And I love being amongst animals. I love watching animals in their natural habitat. I could do it all day. I mean, my wife and I have been lucky enough in our hikes and our travels, you know, we've come across bear. We've come across, you know, all manner of ungulates, you know, I mean, from elk and moose. And I actually got to see with my own eyes a grizzly bear tracking a moose one time. And it was just this. I was in the safety confine of actually that particular situation. I was in a tour bus, so it wasn't that close. But then there was another time I was in Alaska, and we were on our way to a dog sledding camp. Which, if you've ever been around sled dogs, they're amazing. They talk about dogs that love their life. And
they
love
do.
The work.
That's exactly right.
Oh my God, they love it. Mm-hmm. I get mad at these PETA people. That I'm like, you don't understand. These dogs want to work. They love it.
That's right.
They live for it. But we were on our way there, and we were crossing this estuary, and right about 300 or 400 yards up that estuary, there was a big old brown bear, coastal brown bear, swooping at some salmon. And to see that sort of that primal, this is God's creation right here, you know, it's really
exactly
awesome.
Right.
So awesome. You've done a lot of wilderness trekking across Australia, but you've been to other places too, haven't you? Have you been to the Himalayas? And
I went over to the Himalayas for 8 months trekking through the Annapurnas in the year 2000, and that was probably other than, you know, I mean, my family, my kids and all that sort of stuff, but I mean, on a physical, spiritual level, that was probably my greatest achievement, getting to the top of the Annapurna One and Thurong La Peak, a couple of very high mountains without oxygen, and just young and dumb and determined. And I'm looking at a photo of me on that trek right now in my garage, buddy.
That's awesome. You have to send that to me so I can put it up with the podcast.
It's amazing. It was an amazing experience.
Which one did you climb? You said it was two?
Thorong La Peak.
Okay. How tall is that one?
I think that's 6,700 feet or 6,000, maybe 6,700 meters.
Oh, wow.
Or 7,000 meters. That's
intense. And you did that you did that without oxygen?
Yeah. Actually, Shambu, who was my Sherpa for my team, there was 100 of us that went over. It was called the Duke of Edinburgh Awards. It was a program around the world where you were selected for achievements and things like that. I be honest with you, I have no idea still to this day how I got selected or why, but ended up in the group of 100 that went over. And six of us made it to the top. You know, everyone was suffering from high altitude pulmonary edema. And,
right.
You know, all the whatnots that you get with ascending in altitude. Shambu, who was one of the youngest, he was actually back then in 2000, he was the youngest person to climb Mount Everest without oxygen. He comes from a long lineage of Sherpas. You know, it's their tradition to name Sherpas their children after days of the week. He saved my life. There's no doubt about it. You know, we when we got to the top of the peak, right as the sun was rising, it was beautiful. I could see India. I could see China. It was an amazing accomplishment. And he said to me, he goes, you know, you did very, very good. And I said, you know, I was like, yeah, you're damn right I did. But he said, but you whinged like a little girl. I complained. Because, listen, the amount of times where you think you can see the peak.
Yes.
And you get to it, and then you look up, and you're like, oh, damn it.
False summit, yeah.
Oh, boy, false summit city. But when we descended down to where our tents were, I could tell I was suffering from a bit of high altitude pulmonary or cerebral edema, one or the other. I'm not a doctor, but I actually laid down in my tent for a minute, and because there was only six of us at that point, and everyone sort of just descended on their own down to base camp, and I'd passed out.
Wow.
This like black wall of peace, and it just kind of overcome me. It was freezing, and next thing I know, the Sherpas are pulling me out. They basically carried me down for half a day. If I had stayed there, I would have died. I was suffering from something that you get when you climb, and you sort of you fall into this very weird place of peaceful serenity. And I'll never forget it, mate. It was an amazing experience. You know, I think it was more dangerous actually riding on those bloody buses along the cliff faces.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I see footage now where they're like, look at these crazy bastards. Wow. They're on these buses on cliff faces. Yeah. I did that for 6-8 months. And I remember looking out the window and being like, yep, here we go. If we go down here, we're all dead in this bus. the bus has got four different wheel sizes on it. And some guy's pouring water in the radiator while we're driving.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, it's just an amazing, amazing experience. And again, part of the life experience that created who I am today, you know, loving all people and all creatures.
By the way, 7,000 meters is 23,000 feet, bro. That's intense.
Yeah, I'll never forget it. And here's the thing. I would literally take one, two steps, and then I'd have to pause, you know, 10 seconds, 20 seconds, one or two steps, pause. The higher we got, the slower it got. But he accredited the people that made it to the top at that time, and you know, I don't know if he's right or wrong, but he said, you know, because you're a smoker, I used to smoke cigarettes back then.
Yeah.
He said your body is used to being starved of oxygen.
Oh,
he said,
interesting.
He said, you know, healthy people, their body requires all that oxygen. It's not tuned to be starved of oxygen. He said that's one reason why you see a lot of Sherpas, they smoke.
Fascinating. That's fascinating.
I mean, I'm not promoting smoking.
No, I understand.
Yeah. You know how people are these days. I'm not saying smoke a pack of cigs and climb out. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, back then, that's I smoked cigarettes, and he said it may have helped. Let's put the word money.
That's fascinating. You know, I was thinking about the people and the culture and what you were talking about. And you know, having grown up on an Indian reservation, we used to joke because you know I come from Kentucky, where you know we know there's a lot of rednecks, and my family, my people are all country people. And so my friends and I used to joke. I said, you know, we're really not that different. You know, I don't know who can get more people in the back of a pickup truck, redneck Kentuckians or, you know, Indians from South Arizona. You know, we could get a ton of people in the back of a pickup truck. And, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, your situation on the bus. And I'm like, you know, people, we think we make our own differences because at the core, we're not that different. That's just raw living. You know, when you got to have four different size tires and you're putting antifreeze in it, that's just raw life. That's not.
It was fascinating.
Yeah. I love that when you peel back the layers of the human onion, you know, when you take away certain elements that you said earlier, you said it earlier in the conversation, artificial intelligence. Once you pull that out, we're all the same, man. We're all the same.
We quickly become identical because we're all having to survive a certain way.
Right.
And you know, like I enjoy having technology in my life, but at the same time, could I let it all go and live on a property? Yeah, I could do that, no problem.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done a year survival school. I know how to survive outdoors. I've never really lost that primal instinct.
Yeah.
I just think
it's funny when we think about our political and cultural differences, and when people don't break those walls down. You know, you don't see human beings are human beings, and we're awesome. You know, away from our differences. It's when we get our differences in that we start to kill each other. That's the sad part.
It is. It's I watch you know, when I need a pickup, I'm always on YouTube typing in, you know, moments of sportsmanship and moments of miracles and you know, uplifting speeches. And I mean, I cry, mate. I love it when people love. It's such a beautiful thing, and I feel so sorry. You know, I see these hate people say, oh, that person deserves to die, and that person deserves to die. And I sit there and I think, you know, what a shame that that person hasn't been taught or given the opportunity or whatever their life experience is, that they haven't learned to feel the highs and the lows of love, whether it be with humans, family, animals, nature. You know, it's such a beautiful thing to have in your life, and I'm very thankful that I have it and I feel that way. And you know, I do my best to encourage others to learn how to love.
Yeah, I think we need more of that in the world. Do you ever want to go back out in the wilderness again? I mean,
people are gonna go, this guy is crazy, but I am so keen to go on an expedition searching for Bigfoot.
Let's do it, mate. I'll go with you.
I just have this feeling like I bet you I could find Bigfoot and you know, I probably wouldn't come back and tell anyone where it was.
No, family, somebody'll shoot it.
I'm just so intrigued that, you know, that there could be.
Yes.
I mean, there's species that are found every year on this planet, and you know, I know from doing survival school, mate, when you're in tune with nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, us humans, they know you're coming a mile away.
Yes, yes.
And forget about that physical element, the mental element that you gain when you're in the wilderness for a period of time. All of your senses sharpen.
Yep.
And it's amazing what the human mind can do when you're away from the distractions. We are a very, very special species, and I think we've sort of abandoned our abilities a long, long time ago that we may have and we were gifted with. And I could very easily live out in the wilderness. I tell my wife that all the time.
I love it. I'm in, by the way, on the Bigfoot expedition. The Pacific Northwest is so much wilderness. It's so funny when we think we know everything about what's in the world around us, when half the time we don't even set foot outside of our cities anyway. How do we know? But I'm in. So you've also got a YouTube channel where you review cars. I love this. It's very funny. You have a great sense of humor, and there's a lot of really cool cars on there that you go out, and some of them you like, some of them you're like, yeah, what in the heck is this? You know, and you just break it down. How did you get started doing that? And it's very popular, by the way. It's thousands and thousands of hits. So, I mean, people love to watch your reviews of cars. How'd you get started with that?
Mate, I don't know what the defining moment was where, I mean, I love cars. I grew up tinkering with cars on the farm, motorbikes, whatever I could get my hands on. And I'm doing that right now, actually, mate. I'm in my garage and I'm tinkering on a truck. But one day someone just said, mate, you need to, you know, do reviews for people on cars because you're honest and sincere and people will like it. And I was like, oh, I'll give it a shot. And I did a couple of friends' cars and put them on YouTube. I had no idea what the hell I was doing. HE double hockey sticks, excuse me. I had no idea what I was doing. And it just sort of kind of gained traction. And before I knew it, I had a couple of followers. And it takes up a lot of time. I don't think people realize how much time it takes to get the car. You know, there's so much involved, all the equipment, insurance, getting the vehicles, having good weather, and filming, having someone to help you,
right.
And then editing, and it is very time consuming. I don't know how these people on YouTube do it. Every day they're uploading stuff,
right.
And they're a slave to the tube. But it just sort of happened, mate, and it sort of did well, and I sort of took part of the end of the year off last year, and might jump back into it when the sun comes out here again.
How do you line up a car? I mean, you say you have to carry your own insurance for doing this, and so you approach a dealership, or what do you do?
It depends. Yeah, I purchased a policy through Lloyd's of London because it's considered like TV work. It's very hard to get an insurance policy when you're driving $200,000, $300,000, $400,000 cars. But I got a policy just in case someone wrecked into me or I wrecked. I mean, things happen. That's life. But
right.
I'd go into these dealerships, and you know, I happen to know a lot of people in the state that, you know, especially Kentucky, where they may know someone, and I'd go in and talk to them, and I'd say, look,
right.
You know, I can promote your business. We'll hit two birds with one stone, and I get to act like a clown while we do it. And,
right.
Now,
are you able to make a little jack on the side with the YouTube
advertisements
and stuff? That's awesome.
Yep. Yeah, you make money, but I could care less about the money.
No, you're doing something fun.
Yeah, if I really cared about the money, I'd still be doing it as frequently as I was, you know,
right.
1, 2, 3 videos a month. But, you know, I do it for fun. And when it becomes laborious, and that's what it was becoming, like, you know, people wanting to ask you questions, and I encourage it, but it's hard to keep up with everything.
Right.
There's so many aspects to it. And I was like, you know what? Time out.
Yeah.
I'm old, man. I'm getting old. So I was like, time out. The old fella's got to hit the couch for a while and just catch his breath. And when the sun comes out again, I'll...
It's your personality, though. People are drawn to you. You have a great sense of humor. You have that sort of laid back Australian, you know, feel to you. I mean, you're a very approachable, which I think makes you perfect for TV. It makes you perfect for YouTube. It makes you perfect for those guys, because people are like, that's a guy I like to hang out, have a beer with, run away from a crocodile, and then jump in a Land Rover. You know what I mean? I mean, you have that sense about you. So it's kind of cool. I called you when, you know, my wife and I recently bought a Land Rover, and I called you before we bought it. And I was like, because I know you love them.
Oh, and, love it.
Yeah,
love
and I was like, absolutely. Vadim, should I do this or not? And you were like, dude, both feet, man.
Yes,
It was awesome.
Both feet, and you can thank me later.
Yeah, and we have. I've texted you several times. Like, dude, this thing's awesome. We love driving it. You know, it's so much fun.
Yeah.
What's your favorite car all in all?
Land Rover, Range Rover.
Yeah.
Well, I say that now. The Maserati that I drove last year for the channel.
I saw that video, yeah.
Unbelievable. I mean, unbelievable. You know, I mean, it's as much as a house.
Right.
But, you know, I'm a take a bedroom and a bathroom for a four-door car. But I've always loved Land Rovers. We had an old diesel Land Rover on the farm. It just never stopped.
Yeah.
And I've loved the power that they have, the comfort and things like that. And You know, a lot of people are like, oh, you're a snob. You have a Range Rover. No, no. I mean, you know, I just like what I like.
That engineering knows how to do off-road. I think we were sold when we did the off-road track with the dealer, and I was like, there's no way you can convince me that a Land Rover is what I want until we got off the road. And I was like, holy crap. They know how to build an off-road vehicle. I don't know how they figured this out, but it's the best thing I've ever seen in an off-road situation.
Look, they've got a lot of sort of negative press about their reliability and off-road capabilities, and I can tell you right now, it's all lies.
Yeah.
They are magnificent vehicles off-road and on-road.
Yeah.
You know, reliability-wise, well, I mean, they're a performance vehicle, so you've got to look after them like a performance vehicle, and that's not asking too much. I mean, you'll spend, you know, people will spend 6 hours a day on their phone, but they can't, you know, designate, you know, 4 hours to their car every couple of months. You got to weigh up the pros and cons here and there, and you can't just drive a car until it blows up and go, that thing's a piece of crap.
Right, exactly.
You know, that's not how it works.
Keep them maintenance.
I love them. I absolutely love them.
We have the Land Rover, and then I have a Ford Expedition, and I love the Expedition, and it's got 150,000 miles on it. I bought it when it was about a year old. It was one of those certified pre-owned, you know, I always let somebody else take the hit for me on the appreciation.
Yeah, very smart.
But it was only a year old, and I've driven that thing. But I took it in the other day to get some maintenance done on it, and the guy was like, he goes, my God, this is in great shape. He's like, you take such good care of this. And I'm like, I do. My dad taught me that. It's like, be persistent on the maintenance, and cars will last forever, you know. My plan with that truck is to drive it until it fall, you know, the engine falls out, and then put another engine in it, you know.
Yep. So there's nothing wrong with that. They really will last. It's common sense.
Yeah.
I mean, if you keep it up, keep up maintenance and things like that, there's no reason why it won't continue to drive.
I don't want to keep you forever here, but I wanted to talk about something a little deeper too. We were talking before the podcast started. I read an article in an outdoor magazine that disturbed me because it was about the article was about something that I thought was really cool. And it's this guy in LA that's put together a sort of man camp. And the idea is that, you know, in the age of Me Too, we have this issue where on one side of the political aisle, and this is not going to be a political discussion, but on one side of the political aisle, there's this idea. Twitter yesterday tweeted, not today, men, because it was International Women's Day. And it was like, I was like, look, we can acknowledge women without having, you know, to completely denigrate the other gender, you know, which is kind of how Twitter was doing that. But there's this whole big tug of war right now about masculinity. And on the one side, it's everything masculine is negative and toxic. And on the other side, there's a refusal to admit that there is a problem with masculinity in America today. There's a problem with men growing up to be good men and what that means and what does that mean and searching for that meaning. And I don't know, you have always struck me as one of those guys that I think is a model guy in the sense that you have this deep appreciation for nature. You have this incredibly tender, sensitive heart, this huge amount of love, but this fierce protectiveness of your family and your community. To me, that's what my dad always taught me was what a man should be. Do we have a crisis of masculinity in America and the world today?
Oh, man, that's... I feel like there's a lot of...
I know, it's a loaded question, a lot to unpack there.
Yeah, but there's a lot of hostility in the world today, and there's... a lot of presumptions get made, especially with the speed at which information travels, be it factual or not. But I think the bottom line to it all is love. I think that there is not, you know, a real man can be a man. He's a lover. He can be emotional. He can cry. I mean, I don't have a problem when I'm with my daughters and I'm watching one of their bloody kids movies. And, you know, I look over, they're all sleeping. I'm here crying because the dog can't find its way home. It's like, I don't have a problem being that person. In fact, I love being that person. I feel truly blessed that God has allowed me to be one of his warriors and to educate people that even when I'm in my most primal setting, my heart is still open. and loving.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, the society, people, they overthink things. I don't think that every single thing that needs to be, you know, it's so hard to explain, Leland, but I look at America because that's where I've lived for the past 16 years. And I feel like everything is taken so seriously. You can't have a joke, can't say anything. You know, I think it's important that men teach their sons, even their daughters, but since we're talking about men right now, teach their sons how to be men.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's not sexist.
Right.
That's not discriminating against women, because I am that man. I am that father. I don't have a son, but I teach my daughters. And I think that real people that have real emotions and that really do care about all walks of life, they don't understand this this rhetoric that is running around the country and most countries, of this haste to be negative and this haste to say that's not fair and that's discriminatory. And right. And look, there are plenty of examples where it may be.
Right.
But I think we've gone too far, and everyone needs to, and this is why, as a police officer for the past decade or more, I show up on these scenes and everyone's frantic. I'm like, everyone just take a breath.
Right.
Everyone just relax. Let's just figure this out. And you know, you go in at 100 and everyone stays 100. If you go in,
right,
you know, on your guard, but I'm always on my guard, but I am me. I put a lot of faith in God that he's taking care of the situation.
Right.
And to get back to your point, I think that, yeah, look, masculinity is a very deep word. And to me, it encompasses all angles of who you are as a man: love, compassion, manliness, protectiveness, you know, spirituality, mm-hmm. you know, all of these different things. And I don't feel like, it should be an issue at all if men want to take their sons out in the wilderness and just teach them, get back to grassroots.
Right. There's a connection there. My father taught me, because I think you said something that stuck with me. You said, we overthink it. I think we overthink masculinity. My father taught me to be fiercely tender. You know, and when you were talking there, I was like, that's what I'm hearing. There's a fierce tenderness. You know, you can be rugged, and you can be strong, and you can be fierce, and you can be protective, and you can be tender, and you can be loving, and you can be stalwart, and you can be steady, and you can be dependable. These were the things that my father taught me. You know, I never heard my dad raise his voice at my mom. You know, never once. Raised his voice at me plenty of times, but never at my mom. You know,
yeah.
And there, I remember the one time my dad ever got furious with me was when I said something that disrespected my mom, you know, and it was just, I was raised with that. You know, I've seen my dad both be, my dad was, he's kind of a man's man, you know, he's big, strong guy, he's worked with his hands his entire life, but he's also a missionary who's given literally every ounce of money he's ever earned into his ministry, poured it into a community with love and tenderness. And he's a guy that doesn't cry often. But, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, Cameron Mills, my co-host on this show, and I were out doing a basketball Bible camp for the kids at the school that my parents founded on the reservation. And that same trip, my dad's cat got out of the house and was killed by a coyote. And I've never seen my dad break down and bawl like he did over losing his cat. You know, and so we gave it a funeral and buried it and, you know, prayed for it and all that stuff. But it was like this tender moment. And, you know, when I was a kid, I might have been disturbed by seeing my dad cry. But as a man, I now see the full picture of who he is and what I want to aspire to. Does that make sense as a ramble?
Of course,
at all?
Of course. You know? No, it does. It makes absolute sense. I think, you know, I mean, a real man is in touch with his emotions. And emotions it encompasses all those sort of feelings. So,
yeah. But don't you think in America today, there's not enough men that are around for kids, for young boys especially? When we look at mass shootings and what generally drives them, you look at back over the last most dangerous one, 28 of the last 29 have been fatherless in some sense of the word. You know what I mean?
Yep. That's a huge problem. you know, I wish I had an answer as to how to resolve it.
Yeah.
But it is a very, very big issue. And you know, it's not sexist. It's not like a woman can't do that job.
Right.
That's
yeah.
not what we're saying. You know, there is a role for a father, mm-hmm. in a relationship. And for a child, and it seems that that's a dying breed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what scares me. I think the most about it is that we need to encourage. I mean, I don't know. We need to encourage young men. You know, that when you make that decision that it's time to settle down and have a family, you know, then it's time to settle down and have a family. You
that's
know?
Right.
It's,
that's right.
It's a pretty basic thing, but it seems like our society's kind of forgotten that. And that doesn't mean, you know, I'm not saying. You know, sometimes marriage doesn't work out for people, and I get that. But the father has no excuse to not still be involved, you know.
Of course. Of course. I mean, I can't even imagine that it would be something you would even comprehend.
Right.
That's what gets me.
Right.
Is that at what point are you like throw your hands up, like, I don't want anything to do with these kids.
Right.
It's just bizarre to me. It's bizarre. And again, I feel sorry for these people because they're missing out on a huge part of love and life, and you grow and you learn from that and you become such a better person.
Yeah.
And you know, kids, they're amazing. They'll bring out the best in you. They'll bring out the worst in you, but at the end of the day, they'll be looking after you when you get old.
Yeah. Yeah.
You
no
know,
doubt.
So we want to teach them the right ways today. So we're not having to backtrack tomorrow.
Yeah. I was fortunate to have the family that I had and the father that I have, you know, the life lessons that my dad's taught me and the aspirations that he's given me. If you were advising a young man who was getting ready to start his life and potentially considering maybe settling down, getting married or getting serious, what advice would you give him for life?
Learn to love. You're going to get hurt in love, and that doesn't mean like separation, divorce, all that sort of stuff. You know, you have moments in marriages.
Yeah.
You know, I'm far from perfect, and I test my wife's patience all the time. You know, when you're together all the time, you tend to take out your problems on each other. But learn to love, be patient,
right,
and enjoy the ride.
Right,
enjoy the ride. It goes so quick, man. I look back. I'm 44. It's like I hop out of the bloody bath or the shower and I pull a muscle. It's like enjoy every moment because you really don't know what tomorrow holds.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said before, mate, love is such a beautiful thing. You know, I've learned so much from being an open book and having an open heart, and it makes you such a better person. There's no shame in a man having an open heart. In fact, it's the opposite. It's you're a warrior.
Yeah,
that's what warriors do. Yeah. You know,
I totally agree. I think it's awesome, and I'm glad there's people like you out there. I hope that there's more that, you know, I hope that a conversation like this inspires men to be more like that. But listen, I appreciate you. I appreciate the example that you set in our community, as a man of God, as a man of the family. And as you say, a warrior, a protector of your community. And gosh, it's just been fascinating. I appreciate you letting me ramble on for 41 minutes here. We've been chatting. I really hope we can do it again sometime.
Anytime, buddy. Anytime. You know that. You take care. Love to all.
All right. And have fun tinkering with that truck in the garage. We'll talk later.
I will, pal.
All right. Thanks. Vadim Dale. Lord, what a fun conversation. I just want to let you know there's a lot coming this week. We're going to talk to Senator Rand Paul. Congressman Thomas Massie is going to come back on for another installment of the Swamp Monster. So, hey, Disruption Zone's getting it done. If you want to help me out, the best way to do that is to share this podcast and get your friends to subscribe. It's totally free on Apple Podcasts, Google Play. We're also on Spreaker now and working to get on the iHeartRadio app. And hopefully that'll be soon, and hopefully we'll have an announcement for you on that soon. And when that happens, obviously we want to try to push this out as much as possible. So share with your friends, have your friends download it, have your friends subscribe to it, and listen to it as often as you can. Thanks to our executive producer, co-executive producer, my friend and partner, Cameron Mills. We appreciate you and the Dynamics Productions for their production help with this program. You can find us on Instagram. It's at Great Lelando and at The Disruption Zone. And on Twitter, it's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. Thanks for listening. I'm Leland Conway, The Disruption Zone.